No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is your host, Jess Root, for Revenge of the Birds Radio, and we are here today, and this is our preview show. And on the line, I have from silverandblackpride.com, the SB Nation Oakland Raiders site, a great site, I might add. I have Levi Damian. Levi, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming on. As we enter week three of the preseason, we want to get to know a little bit about the Raiders. We saw the Raiders in 2014. The Cardinals came away You don't want to say it. It was a victory. It wasn't the easiest of victories, but it wasn't a convincing victory either. The Raiders have gone through several changes. What is kind of the state of Oakland at the moment in terms of what expectations are entering 2015?
Well, I guess state of the Raiders. That's a very broad question. Well, they have a new coaching staff, which is. Brought a whole new energy, which is it says something and yet kind of doesn't say a lot, simply if you compare it to the previous coaching staff, which, you know, led by Dennis Allen, who was not an energetic guy, and they had to kind of piece together their staff and everything. This one, you know, Jack Del Rio comes in, he's very energetic, and he was able to put together a very nice looking staff of guys, a lot of which had worked with him before. So, because he's a head coach in the NFL for 9 years, and he'd worked with a lot of coaches, and they all had a lot of respect for him, so he was able to get a lot of the guys of his choosing. So that's a big thing. That's a major factor in this, and it's another year into having some of the draft picks come in, as opposed to, because the free agency has not worked out all that well for the Raiders in recent years, but now they have. You know, a guy like Derek Carr, of course, coming into his second year, and as we know, quarterbacks usually take their biggest leap into their second year if they're going to take one. And thus far, from what I've seen, he looks very good, very sharp, and he's making some throws that I didn't see him do much last season. And he attributes that to the fact that, you know, what he had learned in the NFL is hard to really pick up when you're in mid-season mode and you're going from week to week. And you needed kind of an off season to kind of just absorb all that stuff that you've taken in as an NFL quarterback. So that's kind of those are the main things. And of course you have, you know, Khalil Mack, who was fantastic, and he's back, and he's basically the best defender on the team. And they have a new middle linebacker. That's a big deal. Curtis Lofton, who had a pretty poor season as far as missed tackles last year, but what he brings is, he brings a lot of experience and leadership, something that they haven't had at the middle linebacker position in quite some time. You know, they had Rolando McClain, and then they tried to replace him with Nick Roach, and he couldn't stay healthy, and so they had to put Miles Burris in there, who wasn't a pure middle linebacker. So they've had a real shaky time in the middle linebacker for quite some time. So having Curtis Lofton in there is going to make a big difference as well.
So Jack Del Rio is... Is his intensity, does he comes across as, I guess he's high energy, but super high intensity. How have the players taken to that by all reports so far this offseason?
Well, yeah, I mean, all the players, you know, when you talk to players, they basically say what you expect them to say about how they're embracing things. But when you watch them, especially the defense, they tend to embody that same kind of really passionate energy that you get from not just Jack Del Rio, but even more so from Ken Norton Jr., who's a very, very loud and very. They basically, when they talk about him, it sounds like they're talking about a drill sergeant. he's like yelling at him at breakfast and stuff like that. Tell him to hurry up and finish eating and stuff. You know, it's and he pretty much says he just jumps out of bed that way, and he's running at 100 miles per hour until he hits the bed at night. And yeah, you see it. You see it from the, I guess the real question becomes, can they rein in that energy and, you know, keep from, you know, racking up the penalties and things like that and overcommitting on things, and, you know, be disciplined along with having that energy. I guess that's the main thing that you look for, because you want all these players to hustle and have this kind of energy, but if they're just flying around undisciplined, it doesn't bode well. So
you talked about, you mentioned Khalil Mack, you mentioned Derek Carr. Kind of the, if I can assume from my point of view, they would be sort of the cornerstone on offense that you'd like to build around, and then Khalil Mack on defense. How good can Khalil Mack be? I have people who talk to me who say, you know, in a couple 3 years, this guy could be defensive player of the year, sort of talent, sort of production. Of the likes that we see of guys like J.J. Watt. What can we expect to see from Khalil Mack this year? Is even, you know, even preseason, Bruce Arians said earlier this week that one of the main things that they have to worry about doing is blocking Khalil Mack.
Well, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. Personally, from my experience watching the Raiders and covering the Raiders over the years, I haven't seen a player with his amount of like raw talent and physical ability and just work ethic. He's the complete package. He's truly a freak of nature. And I thought he should have been the defensive rookie of the year last year. And if you're paying attention throughout the off season, like you said, you're hearing things about how good he can be. It seems like the entire NFL, like, sports world has, like, over the off season, you know, they pick through film and it seems like they've all kind of discovered that, wait a minute, this guy should have been the defensive rookie of the year, now that we've really gone back and studied the tape, because he got better as the year went along. He only had 4 sacks, and I think that's, you know, really, sacks can be an overrated statistic in today's NFL. You look at sacks and you think that it's like you can almost map it out. He who has the most sacks is the one who's going to go to the Pro Bowl. And there's so much more to it than that.
Well, he was so good, especially early on the season. He was so good against the run.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic against the run. I mean, that's the other thing, is he's got this very extremely rare combination of solid run defense and pass rush. He's just simply like impossible to deal with for the offensive line. If you watch him, he just basically has his way with them. When they try to block him, he's just so strong and powerful that he's immovable. If he wants to get to the quarterback, he's going to, and if he wants to hold his ground to stop the run, he's going to do it. And he's really quite amazing. I really think, like you said, his ceiling is definitely J.J. Watt territory. And if you look at like his Pro Football Focus rating, he was the second rated player at any position below only J.J. Watt.
And that's really good company.
yeah. I mean, you're talking about J.J. Watt, and then there's everybody else essentially, but J.J. Watt and then Khalil Mack. And he may not have had the sack numbers, but he had the pressure numbers. And, you know, sacks aren't always about, you know, just one guy. They're about what he has around him. And he didn't have a lot around him. You know, he was it for the Raiders last year. And if you want to get open, you need to have a guy on the other side who can take some of the pressure. You need to get some of the guys next to him, you know, and if they're not taking some of the pressure off of him, all the double teams are coming his way. And it makes it difficult to actually get the sacks, because the quarterback can just go where you're not. Essentially,
you mentioned Derek Carr taking some big strides. What is different about him in the ability? Because one thing he was, you know, you saw a few flashes, but you also saw a guy who was a high percentage, but at least from from some games wasn't big play. He can make some plays, but it was a lot of shorter stuff. I think the Cardinals, he averaged something like 5 yards per attempt. Now, granted, that was when the Cardinals were playing some good defense earlier in the year. What is it different this year? Is it just adjusting to defenses? Is it understanding offense? Or is it schematically things are a little bit different that kind of suit him better?
I think when you're talking about you kind of hit it on the head earlier, that question when you're talking about he was dink and dunking stuff, and some of that had to do with the offense he was in, but mostly it had to do with what he's doing now is he's making those throws that the anticipation throws, you know, the ones where he knows he can see his guy has a step or is about to get a step, and he throws it over the top of them or in front of them, as opposed to what he was doing last year, which is a lot of, like, if none of his guys he thought were going to get open, he would just dump it off to the tight end or the running back, or he would try to throw a back shoulder jump ball, like, so often. He would do it so often, it became incredibly predictable. Like, when they played the Seahawks, he was talking about how fearless he was, about he didn't care about throwing on some of the better corners in the league. Well, they came back to bite him, as you might expect, because that's great. You know, you're not supposed to be afraid of these guys, but you're also supposed to know when your guy is open and when he's not, and don't just try to throw it and hope that your receiver's going to win that battle, because he didn't. And
there's only a handful of receivers who you can count on to be able to do that consistently.
Yeah, and the Raiders just didn't have those. That's another thing is you take Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper, both come to the team this year, and they're head and shoulders better than anybody they had last year, anybody they've had in quite some time, as a matter of fact. And I think, you know, that goes a long way. You have guys who can get open better, who can get behind their corners a lot better, so he has more confidence and trust, that being Derek Carr, in his receivers. And so, you know, it all kind of builds on itself.
So let's go back to the offseason early on. The Raiders had did a lot. They actually made there were a lot of moves in free agency, going back over kind of the transaction list. Now, over the last couple of years, you could probably raise your eyebrows at a couple of things. The letting go of Jarrett Veldheer, and maybe perhaps there could be some question about letting Stefan Wisniewski go. Is there concern about, I mean, do they have, what is the, obviously Veldheer was kind of a situation that seemed to have been botched. How come they're letting these offensive linemen go who were considered pretty solid at their positions?
Well, the Stefan Wisniewski thing, like you said, it was botched. I mean, there's really no way around it. You know, a lot of the Raider fans like to convince themselves that, if he wanted out, then let him leave. It was like, well, he didn't initially want out. He wanted to get re-signed, and they messed with him. They had plenty of money to pay him. Basically, it was the first time the Raiders had this kind of money to pay, and it seemed to me that Reggie McKenzie, the GM, that is, was taking the approach kind of like he was still with the Packers, and you could do that kind of thing because you're a winning team and players want to be there. But Veldheer he's a top 10 left tackle in this NFL, in the NFL, and that's not hard. I mean, that's
and we're grateful to Oakland for letting him go, because he has been a godsend over on this side of
I see it all the time. Raider fans, they look at like the rankings and they see that Donald Penn is playing really well in there, and they just immediately say, well, Penn is better, so we don't miss him. And it's like, well, but Veldheer is a lot younger, so you have Penn who's playing well. You know, that actually was a stroke of pure luck that they were able to get Penn, because he was cut from the Buccaneers unwisely, and they were able to pick him up from there. But he's also a good 4 or 5 years older, so you're basically talking about a complete contract difference in those two players, like the length of an entire contract difference in those two players. So the Cardinals got so lucky, essentially, that because I remember Bruce Arians was in his
they were scrambling because they didn't expect it. They don't know how it happened. They just, when it did happen, they jumped on it.
Yeah, Arians, I remember seeing how Kennedy was just like, somebody has said to me something about maybe we should take a look at Valdir, and he was like, oh, I don't think that they're ever going to let him go. And then next thing you know, here he is, and I know how good he's been for you guys, and I was pretty hard on Reggie McKenzie and the Raiders organization for letting that happen, and of course, you know, the fans tend to hate me for being hard on the Raiders for doing such a thing, but it's like, hey, you don't let a franchise left tackle go in free agency when you have all the ability in the world to re-sign him and he wants to be there. So, but moving on from that, I mean, as far as the Stefan Wisniewski thing, that was a situation where it's just like, oh, are they really going to do this again? But if you also look at that free agency period, you know, they got Rodney Hudson out of the deal. He is an upgrade. He is an upgrade over Stefan Wisniewski, first of all. And second of all, Wisniewski, it turns out, was injured. So, he had some trouble catching on with any team.
Which makes sense, again, why the... Because in the NFL, as you see year after year, the NFL is really unforgiving when it comes to injuries. You guys see a guy like Jermaine Gresham that reportedly the Raiders looked at, and he doesn't get signed until just a few weeks ago when the Cardinals grabbed him.
Yeah, well, he came in before the start of free agency, and he was one of their first targets as a free agent. And then that's when they discovered he needed the back surgery, and then they backed away from it there. And in the meantime, by the time he came back, they had drafted Clyde Walford, and so therefore they really didn't have that major need anymore as they had before. But you know, I can say, I mean, other than the Valdir thing and the whole situation with Roger Saffold when they weren't able to sign him because he was injured. There haven't been a lot of. He's probably the one major mistake they've made as far as letting players go. Most of the players they brought in prior to this season. I mean, there's just a long line of, you know, poorly. I don't know what you want to call them, poor decisions, because you know, free agency can be a bit limited. As we know, the great players don't come along very often, and when they do, they usually cost way more than you want to pay. So, but there hasn't been a lot of great players that have signed and as free agent with the Raiders in recent seasons.
All right. So, looking at the list of players that left, are there any? So you got Steph Wisniewski, C.J. Wilson, Darren McFadden, a few guys that you cut: Maurice Jones-Drew, Lamar Woodley, Nick Roach is injured. Are any of those guys, maybe Antonio Smith, who is cut, replaced with Dan Williams, were there any of those guys on that list, guys that are going to be particularly missed this year?
Of the ones that were cut this offseason?
Yes, that either were cut or left in free agency.
Well, I know Antonio Smith was very well liked as a teammate, and he was a very good pass rushing defensive tackle, but the new coaching staff is, if you look at some of their, Jack Del Rio's defensive lines over the years, he tends to like really big guys in the middle, like at both defensive tackle spots. And Dan Williams more closely fits that mold. Obviously, I mean, the Raiders, between him and Justin Ellis, who are the projected starting defensive tackles, they have the heaviest duo in the middle in the NFL, something I think like 640 pounds or 650 pounds or something like that between the two of them. So I can't really think of any of them that are really going to be majorly missed, honestly, this offseason, which is, I mean, if they hadn't have gotten Rodney Hudson, I think they probably would have missed Stefan Wisniewski. But they were able to upgrade him, so I mean, it wasn't a big deal.
Of the people that they brought in, so Rodney Smith, upgrade over Wisniewski, Dan Williams, who we are very familiar with here. How has Big Dan looked so far? Because he's playing a slightly different position. He was straight nose in a 3-4 when he was here. How has he looked so far playing that 4-3 tackle?
Yeah. Well, it's he does look more like a nose tackle, to be honest with you. I think if the Raiders were to run more 3-4 defensive schemes, which they will run some, he definitely fits better in that spot. He doesn't have really offer much in the way of pass rush. I think they're going to be doing a lot of multiple schemes because they have a lot of guys that can play either defensive end or defensive tackle. So it's going to be shuffling around inside there with, he's going to be rotating with Justin Ellis. Sometimes they'll both be out there. Sometimes Ellis will be off the field and Williams will be out there. But as far as how he's looked okay. I mean, he hasn't looked bad, but he hasn't really been like dominating, from what I've seen so far.
Is there a free agent who you've come out so far and said, "Hey, yes, he's going to make a difference"? You made the addition of Michael Crabtree. He's good when he's good. But is there anyone on the free agents that you say, "Hey, this guy's going to make an impact"?
You mean that they've signed?
Yes, that they signed.
Well, I mean, you said it. Michael Crabtree he looks just fantastic. I mean, hopefully it transfers over in the regular season. But I think it will, actually, to be honest. I'm not trying to make any excuses for Michael Crabtree because I would never, ever do that. But I think he was in a bad situation with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. And he had a good season there, one good season. I believe it was the season that Alex Smith was still there. It was like the one that they split between Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And Colin Kaepernick has struggled in recent seasons, I think, because defense have kind of figured out how to get the best of him. You know, they've kind of figured out what makes him tick, cracked him, if you will. And he just, some of the best receivers, Vernon Davis, another guy, just not getting the ball as much as he should in San Francisco. And Crabtree needed to get out. And he's much better. I think he will be much better with Derek Carr throwing the ball to him than he ever was with Colin Kaepernick.
So,
and thus far, yeah, he looks like, he's almost uncoverable in practice.
That's good to see. Good to see. Now, here's the big question. What in the world did the Raiders see in Trent Richardson?
Well, they saw a guy who used to be, he was picked third overall, is what they saw. And I think that's it. I mean, that's pretty much the beginning and ending of it. They saw a guy who was at one time considered a, quote, can't-miss prospect at running back out of a powerhouse program like Alabama get taken third overall. And I thought, you know what, since he's already worn out his welcome in two different stops, maybe they can get the best out of him. If there's anything to get out of him, knowing that this is his last opportunity, that they'll be able to get that. And when they brought him in, I mean, I was skeptical, obviously. I mean, if you watch him, it doesn't seem like it's a problem.
He hasn't looked like he has any sort of field vision at all.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I was going to say. It was just like, well, he gets criticized a lot for his weight issues, which, you know, he has had weight issues. But really, that's not what looks to be his problem. He just doesn't seem to have any vision or instincts. He always, he misses. He's already this preseason. There's video, like, clips, like, GIFs out there already of him, like, missing a gaping
massive
hole.
Yes, I've seen a right couple of those, yes.
And then just running into the line or running into his blocker or something. It's like, what are you doing? And it's just so mysterious because you see Latavius Murray, who has quite good instincts, and ability to find the hole and follow his blockers and such. And then you put in Richardson, and he's running his head to a brick wall for a few plays. And then you put in the undrafted guy, Michael Dyer, and suddenly he's finding holes again. It's like, well, the holes are there. Somebody's just not finding them. Last game, he ran 5 times for 5 yards.
Ooh.
So 1 yard per carry.
That's great. Let's talk about the draft class. So you've got some exciting guys. You got Amari Cooper, super talented. You get Clive Walford. Is there anyone else in that? Well, how have they looked? And is there anyone else in that class so far that is expected to make an impact or to be an impactful player in year one?
Oh, in year one, I would say, Ben Heaney has looked really good, fifth round linebacker. They took a couple of linebackers in the fifth round, and I think, and Heaney is, people like to bring up the name Luke Kuechly when they talk about him, but I think that's just because they say, hey, it's a good white guy, middle linebacker, so it must be Luke Kuechly. But no, he does definitely has a nose for the ball. He's really good at shedding blocks. That's kind of his MO. He cut a lot of flack for, I think last season it was, he led the, I think his conference in missed tackles.
Oof.
But it was 16. But he also, I think he was either the leader or among the leaders in actual tackles. So, I mean, you know, you just got to balance it out. Kind of like Curtis Lofton, the exact same issue. He had 145 tackles last year, but he also led the league among, there was only like a safety that had more missed tackles than he did. And so he led the league among linebackers with missed tackles as well. So yeah, but you have to think of it in terms of like how bad that Saints defense was last year and how much they were relying on him. And when you're always the one having to make the tackle, you're probably going to miss a few. So that being said, I mean, I think Ben Heaney, he has the right attitude, and he has that ability to shed blocks, which is something that can't be taken lightly, considering just how poorly Miles Burris, the guy who was in there last year, was at shedding blocks. Nick Roach wasn't too good at shedding blocks either before him. I don't know how much playing time he'll see because Curtis Lofton's going to be in there a lot, but early on, that he looks like the most likely to of the draft picks to make an impact, maybe on special teams, perhaps. But that's just because you already mentioned Amari Cooper and Clive Walford. I mean, those are the two guys that are absolutely going to contribute right now. They're both already projected as starters. Mario Edwards is a second round pick, but I don't know if he's. I don't know how much they're going to get from him right away. And their John Feliciano, their fourth-round pick, he's not going to start on the line, so he probably won't see much playing time either. So that's what it looks like. Is Heaney's probably the most likely to, you know, make some kind of impact.
Looking ahead to the game on Sunday, what is the play now? The Cardinals plan on playing their starters. The traditional thing is to have them play the first half, come out, play a series in the second half. But that might not be the case for all the starters. Carson Palmer likely will not play all the way through the first half, but definitely probably won't come out in the second. Is there any sort of game plan? Are they going to go the traditional route, keep the starters in for a series into the second half, then start going to their reserves?
Well, I mean, Jack Del Rio is not going to be like, he doesn't, he's very tight-lipped about just about everything, but I would assume that would go with the traditional, you play, like you said, you play probably a series into the second half and then pull your starters at that point, maybe even go three quarters altogether. But I would say based on what he's done lately, he probably will take out guys like Derek Carr and Latavius Murray first, and then maybe leave out there the rest of the starters, like the starting offensive line. That's what he's been doing. And like they'll come out at least a series before everyone else. So he's probably he'll play into the third quarter, and then the rest of the guys will play into maybe the end of the third quarter with, you know, a different quarterback and the other running backs.
And are there any players in particular? Obviously, Amari Cooper will be on our radar, Clive Walford. Is there anyone that Cardinals fans should keep an eye out for, not seeing the Raiders particularly often, and being preseason's a game that we don't have to feel super competitive about, so we can sort of kind of enjoy. We want to see good things from our first team, but it's fun to see the other side of the football, to watch other teams and see what players are out there. Who are players that should catch our eyes?
Well, there's a bit of a competition going on for the third and fourth and fifth wide receiver spots, and I would say, you know, keep an eye on Bryce Butler. He'll probably do some stuff. He led the team in receiving, catches, receiving yards, and touchdowns last preseason, and he's leading them again this preseason. So I would expect he should have a pretty good game at receiver. Running back, like I said, I mentioned Michael Dyer. He's an undrafted guy who is a former, like, national championship hero. I know him very well because I'm an Oregon fan, and he had this ridiculous, stupid run that looked like he was down in the national championship and then ended up picking up the first down anyway. And it's what basically broke the heart of the Ducks. And so I know him pretty well from those days. Since then, he kind of bounced around and he last played for Louisville. That's why he went undrafted. But he looks very good. And Jack Del Rio the other day said he has a little bit of juice in him, I think is what he said. So keep an eye on him. Let's see. Who else to keep an eye on? Let's see, the defensive side of the ball. They have a lot of decisions to make along the defensive lines. So there's a lot of depth, and they're still making up their minds as far as the defensive tackle, defensive end position. There's a bunch of guys that could do something. So I can't really pinpoint one of them. There's like Benson Mayawa could do something. Shelby Harris, Danico Autry, a bunch of guys that you probably have never even heard of along the defensive line. And who in the secondary? I would say in the secondary, they have a really young secondary, and we might see some Keith McGill in the game. He's a fourth-round pick from last year. Didn't play much because of injury early on, and he's been banged up a little bit this training camp, and I think he will see a pretty good amount of snaps in the game this Sunday. So I would keep an eye on Keith McGill. He'll either get in with the first team or the second team, and could do some good things. For all the Raider fans, we're all going to be keeping our eye on DJ Hayden because he has looked horrible so far in training camp and the preseason. So a former first-round pick, 12th overall, it'll be interesting to see how he plays and this weekend.
And overall, looking at the season, the AFC West looks to be very, very competitive. Obviously, the Broncos with the healthy Peyton Manning are sort of the cream of the crop. The Kansas City Chiefs have big expectations for themselves this year with their very stout defense and adding some playmaking with Jeremy Maclin. The San Diego Chargers, always sort of a wild card in what they can do. What are sort of the season expectations? What are fans expecting from the Raiders this year? What would be considered an acceptable year for fans?
Well, fans, they always like to predict somewhere them hovering around 500 because they haven't hovered around 500 for some time now. And so whenever you're like a three-win team, you always say, this is the year that we're going to start our comeback, or we're going to be 7-9 or 8-8, or even see a few, like, you know, I want to say delusional a little bit, in like 9-7 type projections. But I would say a decent season for this team would be 6 wins, 6-10. You're basically doubling your win total from last year.
Stealing a win or two from somebody you might expect to win if you look at it on paper.
Yeah, because they have the sixth toughest schedule this year. Last year they had the toughest schedule last year. So, I mean, they have the sixth toughest, which is not great, but it's a little bit better, and they are a better team than they were last season. So yeah, I would say that 6 wins would be optimistic. I don't usually get down to really making a prediction until after the 3rd preseason game. Once I see them in the 3rd preseason game, and then I really break down their schedule, I'm going to decide. But right now, I'm thinking around, Seattle 6-10 would be a pretty optimistic.
All right. Well, Levi, I appreciate you coming on. Anything in particular that you're looking forward to in this game this weekend? You mentioned some particular players. Is there anything other than health that you are in watching in particular? Because preseason games, everyone's kind of crossing their fingers because it seems across the league there's a rash of injuries in practice and preseason. I don't know if it's any more than any year. It just seems every year it seems to get talked about more and more.
Well, I'm going to be looking at the secondary a lot. Like I said, they're pretty young, and the Raiders are still kind of trying to figure out who's going to be there. Going to be their consistent guys. Like I said, I mentioned DJ Hayden and Keith McGill, to see how those guys look, and then some of the young guys behind them in the secondary as well. And I'll be looking at that at the lines, both the offense and the defensive line, which both have kind of a different problem. The defense, I mentioned a bunch of guys that they're gonna have to look at as far as who they cut and who they keep. And the offensive line, they just need some guys to step up. Menelik Watson's a big one. The right tackle, he didn't play so well the first game. He had a better week last week. So basically, we should find out a lot about what he can do in this preseason game. He's the guy they're counting on to be their right tackle. They like him enough that they're planning on starting him over Austin Howard, who's making $6.4 million this season. And it looks like he's going to be making that as a backup. Yeah, they signed this big contract last offseason. This is one of those poor acquisitions they made. The word is that they didn't read the fine print. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but if you look at the contracts they've given most guys, that's a very non-typical contract that they gave Austin Howard, because they gave him a considerable amount of guaranteed money, like long term, which is more typical of a lot of NFL contracts. But they were more looking at trying to front load a lot of things, get the guaranteed money out of the way, so that they wanted to cut guys, they wouldn't be left with a lot of dead money. Well, his contract has a lot of dead money on it, so they're forced to keep him. If they cut him, they only save like $600,000 if they cut him. And so they're looking at paying a backup $6.4 million. But if they like Menelik Watson better at that starting position, that's what they're going to go with. And so he'll need to play well.
All right,
the whole
is...
right side. Yeah.
And this has been Revenge of the Birds Radio. That's Levi Damien. Levi, I really appreciate the time today coming on to talk Raiders as we preview the game. It wouldn't be a bad thing. Obviously, this is pipe dream for perhaps both of us, but. Hey, if we meet again this year, we're gonna talk. How's that sound?
Yeah. All right.
So Levi, thanks for coming on. That's been Revenge of the Birds Radio. Thanks for listening. That was Levi Damien. Again, go to silverandblackpride.com and you will find, as always, an interesting and educated group of Raiders fans and some great writing about the Raiders themselves. Levi, thanks for coming on. We will get together some other time. Heck, appreciate it, man.
Good to talk to you, Jess.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.